Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in.
We are not at war right now.
Oh, good. Well, the Iran, are we talking about?
Yeah.
Just to make sure. Okay.
It's still, all is quiet on the Middle Eastern front.
President Trump doubled down on his claims that U.S. military strikes against Iranian nuclear sites crippled Tehran's ability to pursue a nuclear bomb, rejecting a leaked preliminary intelligence report that claimed the strike had merely delayed Iran's efforts for a few months. So where did the early report come from, and why did the media run with it? Let's kick things off today with a discussion of that on the Mark Cox Show.
But they hate him so much, they want him to lose more than they love the country, and that's sad. But do you have your cell phone? Can you look up what obliterate, the definition of obliterate is? Look it up. Everybody right now, don't go to lindseygraham.com, that comes later. Look up obliterate. It says destroy utterly and wipe out.
Yeah, Senator Lindsey Graham on last night with Jesse Waters, he was talking about this dispute over what damage was really done in Iran, and which is pretty fascinating to me, because the same people that want to argue that they didn't have a nuclear weapon or they weren't ready to build one now want to argue with you that despite what we did, they could still have one in a few days. Really? You can't have it both ways. We've got Brent Sadler with us right now, and thrilled to get him on here this morning. Great to have him on. In fact, he is the senior research fellow with the Allison Center for National Security at the Heritage Foundation, a Navy veteran himself. And Brent, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Doing great, and thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of dispute right now over what was leaked, what wasn't leaked. I watched the Secretary of Defense with his news conference yesterday, pretty clear. He and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs that they hit exactly what they intended to hit and destroyed what they intended to destroy.
Yeah, I mean, first off, just to want to say that Pentagon briefing yesterday is the type of briefing that I, you know, as someone from the military and now out in D.C. watching and trying to translate what I'm seeing, that was perhaps the best briefing, the one that I've wanted for many, many years. So that was very well done. It was the type of detail, the level of fidelity that needed. Questions still standing. We're not out of the woods yet with the Iranians. But the other part of this is this leaked information. Clearly, someone inside the Defense Intelligence Agency has somewhat of a sort of track record on this, as well as a reporter that was less than scrupulous, basically put out information that was very thin, not very well vetted, for purely partisan political purposes.
I am not, don't pretend to be any sort of expert when it comes to building a nuclear bomb. If you have enriched uranium, that in and of itself, you have to have a lab and you have to have the technology, you have to have the scientists. It Yeah. seems to me like we have at the very least disabled their ability to build a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with what we know the day before the attack on Fordor, Natanz, and Esfahan, the three nuclear sites that U.S. B-2 bombers and cruise missiles from a submarine took out over the weekend. We know there's about 900 pounds of highly enriched uranium, higher than 60%. Probably some of that was weapons grade. Not really sure, but that's the amount. The suspicion is it was distributed or all at one of those three sites. Those three sites have been categorically destroyed. And we are getting more and more detail that further confirms that in fact happened. Doesn't rule out, intelligence is never 100%, doesn't rule out the Iranians may have distributed some of it in the days before, whether they have enough to make a bomb. What is clear that they can't, whatever they have now, if they have it moved away, that's all they're going to have for several years. But they have been set back significantly. And I'd say it doesn't mean that we are done with this fight yet. The Iranians have to give up the program, and they can't have any future on-ramp to do so in the future.
I know there's a lot of detail we will never know because for security reasons they just could never disclose that, but I have to be honest, I'm a little surprised at the amount of detail that they've been able to share so far. And I guess my question, and maybe this seems like a silly question, is Is that a security issue where they're talking about how they sent planes to the west as kind of this decoy, and then the real planes going east were the ones that actually carried out the mission, and just all these different things, the technology that we have here in the United States?
Well, that giant poster that they put up was very nondescript and kind of like wavy, big wavy, sweepy arrows and icons. So I don't think it was really gets to the level of tactical security and information. And that's good, and that's what we'd expect, but it was detailed enough to let people know that the military was effective and that it destroyed the targets as intended. It was important to note that the general, the chairman, Raising Cain, actually made a threat to anyone else out there that has deeply buried sites. North Korea, China should take note that there are a lot of other people that have been studying similar sites, maybe not nuclear ones, but deeply buried critical strategic sites for many, many years. So that's an important point to reiterate, that there is a capability and a capacity that was communicated. And that's important, too, for deterrence.
Sure it is. Absolutely. We're talking to Brent Sadler from the Heritage Foundation, whose expertise is also in the area of naval warfare. And I know you've put a piece out on this not all that long ago, but you know, the president talks about bringing the steel industry back, how important that is. I know it's a key in building warships. And you've written an article about America's maritime muscle. Where do we stand? What do we need to do to continue our dominance in that area?
Well, I'm increasingly optimistic. I've been ringing the bell on this and working for about 5 years now since I got out of the Navy at Heritage Foundation on this point. And I got to tell you, if the American public needs an example of bipartisanship, it's this. The nation needs to strengthen its maritime industrial base as a strategic prerogative and also to build up its Navy. And Congress has put money towards it to get the resources. Leadership is in place now, it appears, in the Trump administration. The president himself personally has been very clear repeatedly that this is a priority of his. So we've got the leadership, we've got the plan, resources seem to be coming. I'm optimistic. But today, there's a lot of work. There is nowhere you can look and say, okay, this part of this industrial complex is secure. We don't need to worry about it. All of it. The people, the welders, the pipe fitters, the naval architects, the shipyards, the cranes, the dry docks, to the actual number of warships that we're able to put out to sea, all of it has been 30 years of neglect.
Wow. Obviously 30 years through a lot of administrations, Republican and Democrat.
Yeah, it's a national issue. And it's not that people did things intentionally. It was an accumulation of misguided priorities. We should have shifted to rebuilding our industry, naval and commercial maritime, back in 1999, 2000, mm-hmm. when we knew China was the threat. This is coming off of the third Taiwan crisis after all of their nuclear espionage and everything else. We didn't have to have a break the bank kind of pace. But what we did was far less than sustaining the industrial might that would have kept the Navy. It would have deterred the Chinese. Today, we're very far behind.
Great point. Brent Sadler, listen, thank you for your time today.
Here's more on the leaked report from the Bob Rose Show.
CNN reporter Natasha Bertrand, along with Katie Bo Lillis and Zachary Cohen, published the article, which draws on a description of an early U.S. intelligence assessment from various anonymous sources on Wednesday. The story stated that core components of Iran's nuclear program were not destroyed in Operation Midnight Hammer, and the mission likely only set it back a few months. Okay, put all the partisanship aside, and let's be honest brokers here. That was an assessment that was done very, very early on. I can tell you this right now. The highest level of military folks in Iran were not able to make any assessments during that time period. Okay? So for us to have some sort of intel and ability to make any kind of determination, apparently this is part of a larger report and it's not even been vetted. They leaked it. It's almost like somebody wrote a little piece of it and leaked it, you know.
Right.
But the only part of it that maybe could make the president maybe not look great or it try to make the overwhelmingly successful mission look less successful. Now, wait, who would ever do that? The same people.
Yeah.
The same people that would lie and go, yeah, that Hunter laptop thing. Oh, no. That's Russian disinformation. I'm glad that there is a connection here. So maybe people will start to recognize. See, here's the problem. And I don't know how much it'll get talked about in an open forum. I don't know if Pete Hegseth, how deep he'll go into this. This gets very, very tricky. It really does. We've got a problem. And I stated this a couple of years ago at the very least, if not for... No, I started talking about this a long time ago. The intelligence community, so to speak, okay, air quotes, intelligence community, they are way too powerful. You know who's afraid of the intelligence community? Pretty much every politician.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Do you realize, and this is not hyperbole, I don't have to... You could, I don't know, look to Hollywood just for ideas. If intelligence groups want to set anybody up, if they decide that, yep, we're going to set you up, it's almost impossible to defend against.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And everybody, you know, all 535 Congress folks or whatever, they know that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's 545 now.
Yeah, they
something
know.
Like that. But they know, and they're afraid, even when they're on the intel, you know, oversight committees and things like that. It's a beast. Really, we've developed a beast. And what's even worse than the kind of power that they have, it's how some of them wield it. And like so many other jobs today, some people feel like, oh, I can use my job to further a political agenda, an ideology. If you're an intelligence operative, analyst, and you have this, what I would call a warped sense, that's a very frightening, rogue kind of a scenario. That's exactly the people that signed off on that letter. And look, it goes all the way to the top in some cases. James Clapper and John Brennan are two scum-sucking vermin who never should have ever been allowed to have the kind of power that they had over the CIA. And it's... I don't know what to do about it exactly, to be honest with you.
Let's switch gears and talk about the elephant in the room. The big, beautiful bill, and whether Republicans will support it. Tommy Tucker at WWL Radio breaks down the latest.
What's going on in Washington with the big, beautiful bill?
I don't know. Does anybody really? Justin Buechler joins us now, associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. Try to walk us through it. How you doing, professor?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Let's talk about, you know, this whole Byrd rule and Senate parliamentarian, because we're getting into the deep processes here of the way the government works, and I don't know that a lot of people know about it. So can you kind of give us a tutorial on this?
Sure. So basically what's happening is that nearly any piece of legislation has to go through the Senate with the possibility of a filibuster, and that means cutting off debate with a cloture motion, and that requires 60 votes. The only legislation that doesn't require a cloture motion is what's called a budget reconciliation bill. So what happens with a budget reconciliation bill is that there are a series of procedures, and the process automatically cuts off debate after a certain period of time, so you don't have to call for cloture. But there are a bunch of procedural details to a budget reconciliation bill. So the way that the rules are written for a budget reconciliation bill is you can't just pass anything under budget reconciliation. So the rules for budget reconciliation include a set of restrictions named after a longtime senator from West Virginia named Robert C. Byrd, hence the Byrd rule. And the Byrd rule has a couple of primary provisions. First of all, you're not allowed to increase the deficit for more than 10 years. Now, you might think, shouldn't we decrease the deficit? Mm-hmm. But nobody ever does that, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to increase the deficit. Yay, that. Okay. But the bigger issue right now is that budget reconciliation bills are only intended for what's called fiscal policy. So that means taxing and spending. You can change the tax rates and you can adjust how much is spent on any given program. You're not supposed to use budget reconciliation bills to pass general policy making. So here's the real problem with that. Where is the line between taxing and spending and policy making? Because in some sense, spending or taxing is policy making. And if you change spending provisions in a certain way, are you fundamentally altering policy? So the line can get really murky. And the decision for what qualifies as fiscal policy is made by an appointed position. That's the Senate parliamentarian. Her name is Elizabeth McDonough. She has an appointed position, and she's basically the Senate's referee for what qualifies under the Senate's reconciliation rules. So right now, the Senate's going through this process. We call it the bird bath because we have to give everything a name like that. Mm-hmm. And every provision...
It's pretty clever if you think about it.
What was that? Right?
Pretty clever if you think about it. Bird bath,
yeah, yeah.
Named after him. You
got to
clean it up, see what fits, what doesn't. But go ahead.
Exactly. So what's going on is all of the different provisions for the budget reconciliation bill are going to Elizabeth McDonough, and she's making a call for what qualifies as just taxing and spending and what crosses the line into policymaking. And she's telling the Senate Republicans, no, this is policymaking, and hence you can't put it into a reconciliation bill. And that's what's going on.
Who appoints the Senate parliamentarian?
Senate Majority Leader. So officially, she is appointed by John Thune, but it is a nonpartisan position. It's a professional position. She's mm-hmm. been there for a long time, and she is pretty well respected. So it is appointed by the Majority Leader, but the position is just considered sort of a nonpartisan position. You do a kind of a straight down the line job, and you keep it for a long time.
What made me think about that is when you talked about being the referee, and I'm thinking of Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack with the money. Here, keep it fair, keep it fair. So does this Senate parliamentarian, Elizabeth McDonough, you said?
McDonough.
Does she go back like through different administrations? How far back does she go?
She's been there for a while. I forget how long she's been there, but she's been there for a while.
So she would have been reappointed, actually, not...
She's been reappointed. Yeah, she's been there for a while. But she is generally pretty well respected, and what that means is she makes everybody angry.
Yeah, pretty much. If referees doing their job, right? If I'm doing my job, I get texts from people that say I hate Trump. People say I love Trump. So apparently I'm doing the right thing. And in terms of government and everything else. So, yeah, I guess you got to go right down the middle. When it comes to the different moves, I'm looking at John Kennedy, Louisiana, said it was a setback. Vice President Vance saying, Greg Stubbe, a Republican saying the vice president should overrule the parliamentarian because the vice president's the president of the Senate. Tommy Tuberville, Lord knows where he's at, said that she should be fired. Again, keep it fair, keep it fair. Where does this all get codified in terms of rule? Because the Constitution, does it say anything about a parliamentarian? Does it say anything about filibuster? I'm just going back to the origins of this because we all wind up with rules and doing things and we wonder where they come from, right?
Yeah. So the Constitution doesn't say anything about budget reconciliation or the Senate parliamentarian's role in any of this. So this is written into the rules of the Senate, and rules can change. So hypothetically, if you wanted to change the rules of the Senate, that can be done. And the rule for changing the rules, it sounds weird to say it like that, but the rule for changing the rules requires a vote of the Senate, and the threshold is 2/3. So you would need to get a vote of 2/3 of the Senate to change the rules of the Senate. And that's not going to happen for anything. You don't get 2/3 of the Senate to agree on anything. Now, in principle, you could have a majority of the Senate simply vote to ignore the Senate parliamentarian and ignore the rules, and we call that the nuclear option. We've seen that over the course of
Let me take a break, Professor. I want to hear about the nuclear option when we come back. I just noticed the clock. We got to stop for traffic here. We're talking about the Byrd rule, the Byrd bath, the parliamentarian, about the big, beautiful bill, about filibusters, and when we come back, we're going to talk about nuclear option. 621 traffic now, WWL. All right, 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about the big beautiful bill, as it's called, about the Senate parliamentarian that was reappointed by John Thune, but was originally appointed by Harry Reid, who are about as, I guess, politically diametrically opposed as can be. So the idea is to keep it fair. And Professor Justin Buechler, an associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University, is trying to walk us through this kind of confusing process about passing a bill with reconciliation to avoid the filibuster, and then it's got to pass the Byrd bath, if you will, and see that it doesn't. Again, tell me about the fine line for people that are just tuning in, Professor, because it's hard to say if it's not that everything could be considered fiscal, because at some point it's going to affect the budget, right?
Yeah, so the basic idea is that nearly any policy could indirectly affect the budget, taxing, and spending, mm-hmm. but the Senate parliamentarian will make a ruling on whether or not a provision is directly about taxing or spending. And anything that isn't clearly directly taxing or spending is going to be thrown out of a budget reconciliation bill. And she tries to make a determination about whether a policy is sufficiently directly about fiscal policy, and anything that's just indirect, she'll throw it out. And that's basically what she's doing.
So let's talk about the nuclear option. What is that?
Okay. So if you think back to during President Obama's second term, when Mitch McConnell was then minority leader of the Senate, he announced that the Republicans were going to blockade, filibuster, literally anyone that Barack Obama was going to name to the D.C. Circuit Court, which is the second most important court in the country, and basically say that from then on, only Republicans could fill vacancies on the second most important court. And that forced Harry Reid to say, okay, we either need to use the nuclear option and get rid of the filibuster for judicial nominations, or the Republicans would control the second most important court in the country. So that basically forced the Democrats to use what we call the nuclear option, which is when the majority party says we are going to ignore a supermajority requirement and say we have a majority, we're going to ignore the rules and do whatever we want. So the nuclear option basically means the majority party says we have 51 votes, we're going to do whatever we want, regardless of what the rules say. So first, the Democrats used that nuclear option to get rid of filibusters for lower-level court nominations. Then, if you get to 2016, Justice Scalia dies, Republicans blockade that nomination, and then Republicans come in after President Trump's election, his first election, and Republicans use the nuclear option to appoint Justice Gorsuch after Trump's victory. Okay. So the nuclear option has been used in order to fill vacancies. But the basic idea is that you use the fact that you have 51 votes to ignore a supermajority requirement. What could happen is the majority party says that the parliamentarian does not allow us to put this provision into a budget reconciliation bill. Now, if the majority party says we have 51 votes, we're going to overrule the parliamentarian, what that means is you can put literally anything into a budget reconciliation bill. You can put abortion policy into a budget reconciliation bill. And if you can put literally anything into a budget reconciliation bill, then the filibuster basically doesn't exist anymore. So that would be kind of a nuclear option, allowing the majority party. Go ahead.
Is there any, before we run out of time, is there any limitation on the use of the nuclear option, or is that up to the majority party to decide?
Well, the whole point is there's no limit, because it's the majority party saying we have 51 votes, we're going to do whatever we want and ignore a supermajority requirement. That's exactly what the nuclear option is. It's the majority party ignoring the rules because they have 51 votes.
So they can do that whenever they want?
Yes.
So the only thing I would warn people is that if you have a Republican majority and you're in favor of that, keep in mind that if that becomes the rule of the nation or the way you do things, it could also happen if you have a Democratic majority.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's exactly right. Yes.
We'll send you into the weekend with the always fiery Tara Servatius from WORD Radio. She has some thoughts about what's going on in Washington, and you'll want to hear them.
You gotta be kidding. We did not defeat the Democrats, only to have John Thune. Remember him telling Donald Trump not to interfere in the Senate election? For leader, only to have John Thune undo everything. Can you imagine for a moment? I'm not saying it's going to happen, okay? Can you imagine the Senate, which is led by Republicans, Lindsey Graham and John Thune? I say Lindsey Graham because Lindsey Graham is the chairman of the Budget Committee, forcing Donald Trump to sign a bill that funds Medicaid for 1.4 million illegal immigrants in violation of federal law. By the way, that's illegal. Which is getting lost here. This is what's so incredible. I mean, just stand back for a moment and marvel at where the Bush Republicans, and there's still a couple of them. They're like landmines buried. They'll blow your legs off. Lindsey Graham's one of them. So is John Thune. By that, I mean, their fundraising base is from the Bush era. They were recruited, groomed, and all of the people they owe are from the Bush era. Now, remember who George W. Bush is, besides being an open borders guy. This is a guy who just last year was part of a nonprofit with Barack Obama and Bill Clinton raising money for Joe Biden's illegal immigrant flights into the country. Remember, they made a big deal of telling us, oh, well, the taxpayer isn't paying. Well, who is? Oh, Bush and Clinton, Obama are raising money for it. I said, they ought to go to prison. Let's RICO them straight to prison. I don't care if they're ex-presidents, but they're above the law. So what is happening here is the Bush people are calling up Thune and Graham and all of them say, listen, the employers who donate the money that keep the Bush family in what little power they have left in the Republican Party, those donors, the source of their money, those donors have only one interest, Lee, and that is to continue carrying out the tax evasion scheme, which is illegal immigration. Illegal immigration is not about labor. It's not about Americans being lazy. It's about bringing in people to dilute the worker pool, bust down wages, but most importantly, to avoid taxes. And then the expenses, because you don't pay your workers enough, the expenses for the health care, the expenses for the food, all of that gets sloughed off on the middle class of the United States of America. It's been a great scam for a long time, and it's the only reason that the Bush cabal has power, because those donors give money to be able to continue breaking the law. Okay, I set that up. So the parliamentarian of the Senate is not elected. It's an unelected body. They could eliminate her job tomorrow, or they could just ignore her. She was appointed by Harry Reid back in 2012, a Democrat who is now dead. Do you think for a moment, if we were to replace her with a Republican, conservative Republican, do you think for a moment the Democrats would allow that conservative Republican, a parliamentarian, if they were in charge, to say, hey, no more funding for illegal immigrants illegally to get Medicaid and Medicare? Because that wouldn't happen.
Well, they do what they always do. They'd simply ignore the rules, they don't apply to them.
Yeah, well, John Thune is using, he's the leader, and I use that term lately, of the Republicans in the Senate, is saying, well, you know, I have to go along with the parliamentarian. No, you don't, you liar. You lying sack. You do not. You can ignore anything she says. You can fire her. In fact, that would be a really good idea. So when you hear what she has dictated, I'm sorry, I did not go to the polls to elect the Senate parliamentarian. She doesn't get to say. This is outrageous that Thune is like, well, yeah, I don't have a choice. Sorry. Listen to what she's saying has to stay in this bill. 1.4 million illegals on Medicaid, illegally in violation of federal law, get to stay. They get to get the Medicaid, which means more get to get the Medicaid. Medicare for illegal immigrants. This is outrageously. I don't even get free government health care. I have to pay and I'm an American citizen.
What, food stamps? You're looking for equity, Tara? Come on.
Yeah, I know. I'm a lesser life form than an illegal immigrant. SNAP benefits, because of course the Bush employers don't pay enough. SNAP benefits, which is food stamps. You've got to feed the illegals somehow. I mean, if they're going to work in our factories and depress wages, I mean, if you got to cut their wages, somebody got to pay them. So it's going to be the government. It's going to be you. We'll print the money. You pay at the grocery store when you check out. I mean, you know what else she stripped out? The drilling permits. Fast-tracking energy drilling permits. You know how Joe Biden put the coasts of our country off limits to drilling?
Yeah, and Governor McMaster, too.
Yeah, he's a disaster. A guy can't be gone fast enough. Well, and there's no reason for us not to do. Can you imagine the powerhouse South Carolina would be? Oh, God. If we could, when we have the biggest deposit of natural gas is off our coast. Can you imagine? All we got to do is run a pipeline out there.
And we can't even look for it.
No.
The state and anybody else is barred from even looking for it because we might disturb some dolphins.
And we wouldn't even do that because as Jeff Duncan exhaustively tried to explain to these idiots, the platforms they have now, they're not like the ones in the Gulf of Florida where you can actually see them off the coast. You can't see them. The way they're built, you sit all day long on that beach, you'll never see.
You mean Gulf of America, Terry?
Oh, sorry. Tara. I'm sorry. Things are moving so fast.
I know.
So anyway, yeah, no, and here's the outrage of it, okay? I've spent a lot of time on those beaches with my kids in Charleston, Myrtle Beach, because I did radio in both places. Do you know what you see when you sit on those beaches? Those big, massive, nasty cargo container ships with the rust leaking down the side, like the rust stains, just a parade of them coming into port. And that's killed our tourism. It didn't. You going to tell me a natural gas platform out there that you can't even see is going to do anything? Can you imagine piping that into this state and building our manufacturing, like as the backbone of our manufacturing? The prices that we can manufacture, well, it would make too much sense. Sorry, what am I thinking? Anyway.
Oh, we might even fund roads and bridges.
Sense, and we never do anything that makes any sense. So anyway, back on this. So John Thune trying to say, oh, so sorry. Yeah, but the parliamentarian is saying, can you imagine making Donald Trump sign a bill that funds Medicaid and Medicare for illegal immigrants that he's trying to remove from the country? That is an anchor to keep them here. It is outrageous. Stripping Trump's energy drilling permits. Well, I'm sorry. Did Thune get an email from China? Is that it? Is that what they want? Republican leadership, y'all. This is why we lose. So there's a lot of ways around this. J.D. Vance can overrule the parliamentarian. John Thune could come to his senses, fire her, or ignore her. But here's your problem, Lee, right now. And by the way, they asked Lindsey Graham about this. Well, you know, how on earth can you pass this? Like, how can you even do this? I'll play that in a minute. He's like, well, you know, we got to get this to Trump's desk. Got to go fast. It's not worth it. Not worth it.
Always beware the bums rush.
Yeah, really. I know. And whenever Congress starts moving fast like that and claiming they're in a hurry. Yeah. Well, here's Representative Tim Burchett from the House, right? And he is just you can tell this, he's just gobsmacked. Like, wait, you want us to fund Medicaid for illegals, food stamps for illegals, take the drilling permits out of it? I mean, this is a horror show. Here he is.
I don't know why we allow an unelected bureaucrat that much control, but what I worry about in the Senate bill is, of course, the allowing illegals and folks that shouldn't be on Medicaid to be on Medicaid. I don't see why that's a problem.
Allows them on Medicare, too. Also, that House bill to fund sanctuary cities, this puts the funding back. Okay, here's your problem right here, okay? And they can play all the pretend they want. This has got to get killed. Let me tell you why it's got to get killed. Because you've seen how close the House is, right? The votes in the House?
Oh, yeah, it's tight. We know.
Any Republican who votes to fund Medicaid in this bill is going to get primaried. It's going to be like a dinner bell for a primary challenge. I can already see the commercials. I can see them. They can't lose 10 votes over there. They can't lose 5 Republican votes over there. Republicans can't vote for this. They can't. It'll be used against them in a primary. Lindsey Graham knows it. So does John Thune. They are evil. And either way they win, there's not enough votes to pass this monstrosity in the House, they win. Then it's not, you know, oh, look, it's the House. It wasn't us. This is a poison pill. Now, the good news is, and I hope he's right, Senator Eric Schmidt is saying that he's claiming, nobody else is reporting this, so I don't know if it's true, but he claimed on CNN, we've already got the food stamps out of there. That would mean they're defying the parliamentarian, which is the opposite of what Thune is saying. So I don't know how that's happening, but this stuff's got to be removed. I'm telling you, Republicans cannot vote for this in the House. They will lose their seats. Thune knows it. Graham knows it. This is a game. You know what this is? This is Amnesty Lindsey working his evil behind closed doors, thinking you won't notice. Well, we noticed, sir. I want to remind you, you got a primary coming up. It would be a shame if people got really, really, really mad.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.